We cover all bases, face it, you can't erase us. Back and forth, watch where it take us. Cultural topics and sports, baby, you know we got it. Always our response is amazing. All bases covered, yeah. Yeah, you know you love it. Our thoughts, they be off of the dome. First to the second, the topics, they change like the weather. Then you know we bringing it home. We cover all bases, face it, you can't erase us. Back and forth, watch how we shine. Cultural topics and sports, baby, you know we got it. Always our responses be prime. All bases covered, whoop. Yeah, you know you love it. No limits to where we can go. So just grab a seat. Oh, no, this ain't MLB, but you know it's time for the show.
Welcome to another edition of the All Bases Covered podcast. We've been... really by choice, a lot of stuff. Don't have Sam on the show tonight. Sam is not feeling very good. I think he's got some food poisoning. Apparently, John, you'll find this funny. He ate some bad Chinese food, and he's not feeling very good. So,
I mean, it seems like Sam's always fucking sick, dude. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Was your cooking?
Yeah.
I mean, do you keep I think every time you take somebody out or you send somebody food, dude, you're getting these people sick.
Dude, that's not
call
fair.
Call Sam and find out if it came out the wrong way.
Wow. Wow. I mean, it's almost as bad as the fucking Chinese food.
No, you know, it's funny.
holy shit. All right. What? Go ahead.
All right,
anyway.
Who's got on the book?
All right, dude. Well, so we got a lot to talk about today. Obviously, we had two big pay-per-views over the weekend. We had UFC 285, AEW Revolution that hit over the weekend. But I want to get into some Ja Morant stuff, man, because this stuff is kind of crazy. All of a sudden, this is a dude that had, like, no history of getting in trouble. And now, all of a sudden, it's like the fame has gotten to him, and he's not handling shit real well. And now he's under investigation for stuff. Colorado police are investigating him, and he was in trouble for smacking some dude around. Like, I don't know what's going to happen with him. Right now, the Grizzlies are like, well, you know, we said two games, but he's on indefinite suspension until we feel he's better. So, right now, it's literally almost the end of the season. There's like 3 weeks left of the NBA season. Memphis is currently the number two seed out west by only a game. They're going to need Ja down the stretch here if they want to stay in like a top three seed, because Phoenix is going to come on strong. Golden State is all of a sudden right around the corner. Golden State's, you know, only four games back from the number three seed. So I don't know, man. I think Memphis is going to have a talk with Ja, man, because I feel like, dude, that gets their shit straight.
Yeah, so apparently now he's under investigation besides the, I guess, him flashing the gun. He's not allowed having the gun on the NBA premises, the plane, and now they're thinking he brought that gun on the plane and all this stuff. So there's a lot more to this story that's probably will be coming out in the next couple of weeks. But I think you're right. I Memphis is probably going to start dropping, and it's going to hurt them. But Ja Morant, he's probably going to be suspended for more than 50 games. I mean, is this the end of him?
Whoa. You think 50 now? You think he's going to go?
Well, you can't bring your gun on a plane. And he was bringing the gun on a plane, apparently. That's the story I read earlier. And also, the team facilities, he's not allowed having the gun there. So, yeah,
I mean,
what I read, they're talking like 50, or, I mean, if it comes out that there's more to that story with that kid, I mean, That could be his fucking NBA career.
Well, we saw it with Gilbert Arenas, right? What, you know, someone might have to help me out here, but Gilbert Arenas had a gun charge against him that ineffectively ended his NBA career because he was playing for the Wizards, I believe, at the time. But Gilbert Arenas...
He brought it and pointed at one of his teammates in the locker room, correct? Is that what happened?
Wasn't it over like a card game or something, though? They were playing like cards or something, and he got pissed.
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know, man. Ja's so young, dude. He's like 23 years old, man. Like, if this is, in essence,
sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But so according to BleacherReport.com, Karen Butler details Gilbert Arenas' gun incident in his new book, where he talks about Butler recounted the now infamous incident between the two in December of 2009 when the two teammates with the Washington Wizards brought guns into the locker room. Says the two were kidding, according to Butler. Arenas showed up to practice 2 days later, four guns, which he was displaying for all to see, led to the following. Hey, motherfucker, come pick one, Gilbert told Jarvis while pointing to the weapons. With one of these. I know you don't need to shoot me with one of those, said Jarvis, turning around slowly like a gunslinger in the Old West. I've got one right here.
All right. Okay. What did that lead to, Joe? What did that lead to, though? How much of a suspension did that lead to for Gilbert Arenas? Because that's I'm kind of curious because honestly, after that incident. We never heard from Gilbert Arenas again. I never heard anything. And if that's the path that Ja Morant's going to go down, if that's the path, then, man, to have your NBA career over at, like, 23 over some stupid shit, I don't know. Go ahead.
I said that's kind of where I think these young athletes, they think they can do what they want. They get this money. And it gets to their head.
Okay.
I mean, we see it time and time again.
Here's what he got, according to CNN.com, Washington, said suspended NBA star Gilbert Arenas was sentenced to 2 years of suspension or supervised probation Friday for bringing guns into team's locker room. He also is to serve 30 days in the halfway house. He was required to serve 400 hours of community service and could contribute $5,000 to a fund of victims of violence. That's it. Does not say anything about any suspension from games.
Yeah. So, well, you said 2 years suspension, I think, is what you said.
No, 2 years of supervised probation.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, essentially, he had to check into a check in with a police officer every week or every day.
Okay.
2 years.
So I guess he did get a lengthy suspension from the NBA. I see here that he missed like about 30 games. And then he got released and he went to the Orlando Magic after that. So, I don't know. It might be, you know, Josh, you might be right with what you say. If they suspend Ja Morant for the rest of this season, which you're looking at, they've played about 65 games so far. That would be about 17 games this season. If you count the playoffs in that, and then you say, like, 10 games next year, I mean, the 10 games next year won't really matter. They can kind of get by through the first 10 games. But they suspend them the rest of the season through the playoffs. Memphis's chances of even getting to, like, the conference final are over. It's over.
Does the playoffs count, though? Or is it regular season?
And they can count playoff games, too.
Okay. I didn't know if they could count, if they count the playoff games or not for suspension.
Yeah, they can. So, I don't know, man. I hope Ja gets his head right. Like I said, he had no history of this stuff coming out of college, his first year or two in the league. We didn't hear anything. It's only been recent. So I hope that he finds some help and he gets settled down a little bit. And, you know, maybe this is a wake-up call for him. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Tony, these young kids get all this money and then they get around the wrong crowd. And that's what happened, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Dude's got all the potential in the world to be one of the best players ever, and he's throwing it away. So
he is.
You're right. I hope he can get his head out of his ass and come back and put his head down and be the player that he's been the last couple of years.
So one of the quarterback dominoes has fallen. Derek Carr has signed a deal with the New Orleans Saints. So the Saints are now not going to be in the market for a quarterback. They get one of their guys that they wanted. They wanted a veteran quarterback. They felt that in that weak division where every team needs a starting quarterback, that they are in a position to at least win the division for the next 2 years. Tampa Bay needs a quarterback. Carolina needs a quarterback. And so does, what's the other team in the NFC South?
Indy?
No, that's AFC South. Indy's in the AFC South, not the NFC South.
Atlanta.
Atlanta, thank you. Atlanta. So all those teams need a quarterback. Now, Atlanta might have one in Desmond Ridder. I don't know if they feel that he's going to be the guy. They might be looking for a quarterback. Carolina, we know, needs a quarterback. And we know Tampa Bay needs a quarterback because all they have on their roster is Kyle Trask.
Tampa Bay doesn't have a lot of money. They have so much money over the salary cap that they might go look at like Baker Mayfield and have him compete against Trask. If the rumor's true about tomorrow, we all know the Ravens are probably going to franchise tag Lamar Jackson. And I think they're going to do the second one. I think they're going to do the second one to where a team can offer him. And if they can't match it, then they'll get two first-round picks. I heard Atlanta might be the team interested in that.
So
that would be interesting for at least two of the quarterbacks.
I have to tell you something. That because you brought up Lamar Jackson, I was going to bring this up. But since you brought up Lamar Jackson, the word out of the combine is these two things. But Baltimore is not happy with Lamar Jackson, and it's not just for the whole contract situation. There's a lot of other things involved, and they also don't feel that he's been negotiating in good faith. But here's the big thing I heard. You know that Daniel Snyder is involved in a lot of turmoil. Daniel Snyder is probably on his way out as an NFL owner. I am hearing that he might give the entire bag to Lamar Jackson as a big middle finger to the rest of the NFL. He'll give Lamar Jackson 6 years, $260 million fully guaranteed. He won't have to ever pay that debt because he won't be the owner anymore, and it will be a big fuck you to the NFL. And then he kind of repairs his legacy because he brought Lamar Jackson to Washington. And he has a coach there in Ron Rivera who is very adept at working with a quarterback with the skill set of Lamar Jackson. As you know, he went to a Super Bowl with Cam Newton and took the Panthers to the playoffs multiple times. So, very interesting. If Daniel Snyder wants to go rogue and say, you know what, fuck the NFL, I'm done, I'm out, and this is my one last kick in the nuts to you, this is what I'm going to do, things could get very interesting because all of the owners hated so what Cleveland did.
Just so you're aware, is Daniel Snyder had the auction for the teams, and it was everybody bid on it, but no one hit the minimum that he wanted to the bid. So as of right now, they still can't force him to sell the team because he hasn't got what he's asking for. Just to throw that out there. And he did not allow Jeff Bezos to actually put a bid in, like the NFL wanted Jeff Bezos to be able to. So
wow.
Jeff Bezos is working a different angle to try to get a bid in. But as of right now, Daniel Snyder is going to be the owner. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about the whole Lamar Jackson with him. But
yeah.
They're over the salary cap too. So there's no way they have enough money to even offer Lamar Jackson that much money as of right now, unless they start cutting some of their players.
Yeah,
I
don't know, man. It'll be interesting. That's an interesting point there. I didn't know that Jeff Bezos was even interesting. I have an idea that I'd like to throw out is Mr. Bezos, if you happen to be listening, which I'm sure you're not, you have better things to do, but if you are listening by some happenstance, how about you throw all of your money into the All Bases Covered podcast, and then we buy in Washington with your money. And then you can still call all the shots, but we would just be the face that goes with the ownership.
Runs the place. we're gonna be like a John Cena. I'm the face that runs the place.
Jeff Bezos, you just give us all your money. Give us $5 billion. Okay, give us $5 billion.
No,
that should be enough.
Daniel Snyder wants $8 billion for the
Fuck
Commanders.
Daniel Snyder, $8 billion. You're
$8 billion.
Fucking shittiest franchises ever known to man. I mean, granted, they were really good, 40 years ago, but they haven't done anything since 1995. So,
no, I know.
$8 billion. Give me a break. You're not the Dallas Cowboys.
All right. I got to jump off this call for like 5 minutes. So go ahead and talk to the producer for about five, and I'll be right back on.
Blast.
Oh, man. Josh.
Jumps off.
Sorry. My boss is calling me. Got to handle some work stuff.
Shit. All right. So Bengals football, while Josh is off the podcast for a minute. Joe, I don't know how you feel about this, but it seems that from what I'm hearing, Duke Tobin and the GM for the Bengals are heavily leaning tight end in the first round. They met with all four of the top tight end prospects at the combine, which would be Dalton Kincaid out of Utah, Michael Mayer out of Notre Dame, Luke Hargrove out of Oregon State, and then there was Sam Laporta out of Iowa. It looks like likely that at least two, if not three of those tight ends will be available when the Bengals pick 28. Now, I'm not a huge fan of taking a tight end in the first round unless I feel like he's a complete game changer. I would rather have Anton Harrison, the tackle out of Oklahoma. But I'm kind of curious, Joe, your thoughts on the Bengals draft and what you think they should go after in the first round, or if you think they should even target a tight end or keep Hayden Hurst on a cheap deal.
That's the hard part is
that air, Joe.
What is their what's their order?
So the Bengals pick 28. And the Bengals are picking 28th in the draft.
Okay, so they got 28th pick of first round, 60th of second. So they're pretty deep in each one of them. I mean, are they hoping that – because I agree with you, they need a tackle, 100%. But do you think they're hoping that – because let's be honest, first round – a lot of offensive guys don't really go, do they? I mean, or offensive linemen.
Oh, yeah, offensive linemen go in the first round all the time. I don't know if the Bengals are planning on addressing offensive line in free agency again and then maybe taking another guy or two in the middle to late rounds as depth. I don't think the Bengals need a complete overhaul here on the offensive line. I really don't. I think they got to get a new left tackle and they got to get a right tackle to kind of hold the fort down until Lael Collins comes back. And that right tackle could be Jackson Carmen. Maybe Jackson Carmen plays right tackle for the first 8-9 games until Lael Collins is ready to come back. But I'm not real confident in that. I still think that you need another guard or two as depth, I think, and we need a tackle. And so if they want to go, hit free agency for a guy here or there and then draft a couple dudes, because offensive line in this class is fairly deep. I feel like the Bengals could grab a starter in the fourth or fifth round. It's a pretty deep class, along with cornerback. But what's not deep in this class is two positions that I also think the Bengals definitely need to address, the line. And I still think that they're in need of a linebacker as well, because they might lose Jermaine Pratt. I don't know how Akeem Davis-Gaithier is working out, but really they've only got Logan Wolfen back there. So there's a lot of ways it could go, but I think we'll know more about what their draft strategy is going to be once free agency kicks off.
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at linebacker, there's a couple big names that were just cut. Kendricks from Minnesota led the team with like 136 tackles. That would be an upgrade from where we were at. And then Leonard Floyd from the Rams, he just got cut.
Well, that's what we're talking about, because there's a lot of things pointing to the Bengals picking up a tight end for the first round of the draft.
Yeah, it looks like they're going. They like that Michael Mayer out of Notre Dame, or that kid from Utah, or the two that
Dalton,
I'm hearing.
Dalton Kincaid. But
yep.
I was telling Joe that I like Anton Harrison, the tackle out of Oklahoma, a lot, especially on the right side of the line. I don't think Anton Harrison necessarily projects as a left tackle in the NFL. But I like him a lot on the right side, especially to kind of fill in for Lael Collins and then maybe eventually take over the job from him maybe a year or two down the line.
Yeah, but if you don't know he's going to be a starter right away, you don't waste your number one pick on that. You're going to get a number one pick that's going to be somebody that's going to be a starter pretty much right away is what you kind of want.
But he would start right away, right? Because Lael Collins is going to miss at least the first 6 to 8 games of the season. And then he's there as valuable depth. The problem is the Bengals, they lost 3 starting offensive linemen right before the playoffs. They didn't have the depth behind them. We were starting D-level guys. Adeniji is not a good – he's not a great offensive lineman. And neither is Jackson Carmen. I'm sorry. For that matter, Jackson Carmen is not a great offensive lineman. And then, the other guy, I can't remember his name, who replaced Alex Kappa, held his own okay. But, man, we got to have some depth there. And I want to have a better pass block win rate. Like, the Chiefs were number one in pass block win rate all season. This is all I'm trying to say for a lot of the people who are like, oh, keep giving Burrow more weapons. No, give him more fucking time. Patrick Mahomes doesn't have a Chase or a T. Higgins. He has Travis Kelce, and then he has a bunch of average to below average receivers on the outside. The Chiefs took the number one defense in sacks, the Philadelphia Eagles. They took the number one defense in sacks, and Philadelphia had 0 sacks in the Super Bowl. 0. Zero sacks in the – they had – they the Philadelphia Eagles set records with the amount of sacks they had on the season. And they didn't touch Patrick Mahomes. And the Chiefs had the number one pass block win rate in the NFL. You get Burrow in the – you give him an offensive line that finishes in the top eight in pass block win rate, not number 23rd like they did this past season. You know – you give them top eight, no one is beating the Bengals. No one is beating Joe Burrow. I will say that loud and proud. Maybe Mahomes, and that's it. But there is not a single other team or QB in the NFL. What's that?
I don't think Mahomes would beat them. If Burrow had the time, I mean, we've seen it. Out of the four games that they played in the last 2 years, three of them Bengals win.
Yeah.
And – even that fourth game, the Bengals still had a shot to win that game, right?
Right.
Patrick Mahomes, he relies too much on one person, that's Travis Kelce. If you can take away that top target and you can stop the run, he's not going to beat you. Plain and simple, he's not going to beat you. So you give Burrow the time, that Chiefs defense, they're not going to stop that team at all. And then as long as the Bengals can stop Mahomes one or two times, in that game, they win every single time. So, to your point, no team would probably beat them. The only team I would say would have a shot, that would be the Ravens with Lamar Jackson healthy. I think the Ravens would have that shot. And for whatever reason, don't know what it is, the fucking Browns.
That team just knows how to play
against Burrow and – they beat them.
But that's because Cleveland has a great defensive line that gets pressure. Myles Garrett and those boys get pressure. If Burrow was playing behind the offensive line, that gave him the time that Mahomes and Jalen Hurts and some of these other guys got, nobody's beating him. Not the Ravens, not the Browns. Nobody. The Ravens and the Browns can get pressure on Burrow because he plays behind a subpar offensive line. They've made strides. And, Josh, you and I both saw that the Bengals' offensive line, they made strides this past season down the stretch when they went on that win streak until they once again got hurt. But it still wasn't as good as what Mahomes had. So,
no, absolutely
if I'm
not.
The Bengals,
I mean,
yeah, you just if the Bengals had been in the Super Bowl instead of the Chiefs, the Eagles would have had at least six sacks. At least five or
if
six
not
six
more.
Sacks.
It's just that the way they play defense too.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Or it might not because it with Burrow being able to get the ball out so fast too. That way.
Yeah, but that didn't matter.
That shotgun.
Kansas City still ate his lunch. They sacked him four times in that game.
No, I know that. No, I'm talking about if our offensive line we had before they all got hurt.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, man. But that's what I want to see them address more than anything. But now I was going this way with the car conversation before you had to step out for a second, Josh. But they say there's about four round one prospects at the quarterback position this year. Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Will Levis, and Anthony Richardson. I'm going to tell you now, there's really only two, and there might really only be one. I don't really like a lot of the quarterbacks in the NFL. I think all of them are dependent on where they fall to. But I think out of all of them, C.J. Stroud has the best opportunity to become a quality starter in the NFL. Bryce Young's size worries me. I saw him walking
around
the
combine.
Yeah,
he worries me too.
I saw him walking around the combine next to somebody who was like 6 foot flat, and he was shorter than him by at least an inch or two, it seemed like. And he's really light. He's only like 170 pounds. Will Levis, screams Zach Wilson to me all over. He screams Zach Wilson. And Anthony Richardson, I don't know why the fuck he's got all this fanfare and hoopla for a guy that threw 17 touchdown passes and 9 picks and threw for 2,600 yards and completed barely 54% of his passes. That doesn't translate to an NFL quarterback. Everybody hyping Anthony Richardson, saying his raw athletic ability and his ability to run and he has a cannon for an arm, are falling in love with Akili Smith. Because
isn't that the same
right
type
now,
of quarterback that Tennessee took last year?
Who? Oh, Malik Willis. Yeah, but they
Malik
took
Willis.
The difference is I think Malik Willis went in the third or the fourth round, not in the first round, not in the top 10.
Correct, yeah. No, yeah. I mean, Anthony Richardson, he played one season at Florida. I don't think he was all that good. Yeah, he had plays to where he ran the ball, but as far as throwing the ball, no, he was terrible. He was not very good at all. And
here's the thing.
You're gonna put him above.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, go finish here.
I said, and you want to say he's a better prospect than the C.J. Stroud? Apparently C.J. Stroud was freaking lighting the scoreboard up during that whole combine. Like, he was probably the best passer a lot of these NFL scouts have seen in a long time. So that should tell you something. I'm still not a big fan of C.J. Stroud. I think he gets flustered when he gets blitzed and he's getting pressure to his face. So that would be, I think, his knack to where he's going to struggle in the NFL. Bryce Young, yes, he's small. Kind of reminds me of Kyler Murray, honestly.
Okay.
I think he's a better Kyler Murray. I think he just has a better arm.
He's got a better head on his shoulders than Kyler Murray does, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Will Levis, I think he's going to be a better Zach Wilson. I don't think he reminds me of a Zach Wilson. Maybe more of a Baker Mayfield. I think he's better than Zach Wilson. So I guess
yeah. Do you know why?
I'm trying to think. Maybe Josh Rosen. Maybe a little bit strong arm, big.
Yeah. I think the main reason why I had said Zach Wilson is because he's apparently wowing everybody with these throws against air. And it just, you know, that's what Zach Wilson did. And it didn't turn out to be anything. I'm going to go back to Anthony Richardson real quick. Because Richardson completed 53% of his passes this past season. A lot of people were saying, oh, well, his receivers weren't that good. Anthony Richardson played at Florida. He didn't play at Boston College. He didn't play at Fresno State. He didn't play at Wyoming. He's not coming from North Dakota State. He played at Florida. You cannot tell me that Florida doesn't have wide receiver. I don't want to hear that argument. I don't. If Bailey Zappe at fucking Western Kentucky University can complete 70% of his passes at Western Kentucky, then Anthony Richardson should at least be able to complete 60% of his passes at fucking Florida. And those quarterbacks that come out of college with low completion percentages are bust 9 times out of 10. There's been one or two guys that are the outliers, Josh Allen being one of them. And then there was another guy.
Cam Newton?
That Cam Newton was over 60% in college. But there's another guy that I'm drawing a blank on right now. But he had an underwhelming completion percentage in college, but he turned out to be a pretty good pro quarterback. But Anthony Richardson doesn't strike me as that guy. And if he goes to Carolina, I think Carolina, once again, is going to be looking for a quarterback in 3 or 4 years. I don't see it with him.
He doesn't scream winner to me.
Josh, we got about 20 minutes to go. Let's pivot away real quick from some football. We had talked about this before I went on my trip. And why don't you break down some of the new baseball rules and some of the impact that you're seeing in spring training so far?
I mean, the biggest one, I don't know all the rules. I really haven't paid attention, but one of the rules, they incorporated the clock now, and they're really holding players and batters and pitchers to it. So the first couple of games of the season, they had two incidents where the batter, you have 15 seconds for the pitcher to pitch the ball. You've got to be in the batter's box ready to go. And the pitcher's got 15 seconds to pitch the next pitch. And if the pitcher does it, it's like an automatic walk or a ball. I think they said a walk, but I don't quote me on it, Mr. Producer, if you can find out the regular rules. But another instance where if the batter doesn't get in the box in time, it's a strike. So it was Boston and the Braves, to where the Braves had bases loaded and Boston was pitching. And the batter didn't get in the box in time to where ump called him out. He thought it was a walk and ended the game. Bases loaded, one out or two outs, 0-2, got out. So it ended the game on because the batter didn't get in the box early enough. And then it happened to Manny Machado with the Padres to where he didn't get in the box early enough and they called it a strikeout too. So it's very, very interesting, these rules, and these players are going to have to get used to getting in the batter's box. The pitchers are going to have to get in there and pitch within 15 seconds. Now, the only difference is if there's a man on first or on the base path, then the pitcher's got 20 seconds to pitch the ball. So I don't like it because – I think it takes away the pitcher's momentum. It fucks with the hitter. I mean, how many times have we, like, on Cincinnati, Sean Casey. Sean Casey took fucking forever. Mixed both gloves. Took a couple practice swings. It would take him about 25, 30 seconds to get ready in the batter's box. Yes, it does blow up the game. But the games are 2.5, 3 hours. They're boring as shit anyway. It's baseball. We all know that. What the hell is a pitch clock going to really do? It's going to speed it up a little bit, but, I mean, I'd rather be out of my house for 2.5 hours, 3 hours at a baseball game than sitting back at home in an hour and a half, you know?
I guess.
So.
Does it improve the gaming? See, you're making an interesting
point.
It's
all about speed.
It's the speed
of the game.
It's literally meant to increase the tempo of the game.
The speed up the game.
Now, where they're trying to change, like, actual play in the game is they're changing the – so at the time the pitch is thrown, all four infielders are required to be on the infield dirt or infield grass with two on each side of second base. How this will be enforced. If the hitting team reaches base and runners advance on the ball hit, under the violation, the game proceeds. If the play has any other consequences, an out, a sacrifice, the hitting team can decide either accept the penalty, which would add one ball to the hitter's count, or decline it, and the play would stand. This is supposed to increase batting averages because they're down to a 243 last year, which is the lowest since 1968.
Well, The one thing that I'm glad they changed is the shift. That's why a lot of these hitters are not getting on base and not lowered the batting average, because these analytics.
That's the new rule.
Shift, perfect. It goes back to normal. You don't have three people on the fucking right side or three people on the left side to get the pull hitter. You know, Jay Bruce basically retired. Because he couldn't get it to the other side of the field. He wasn't the pool hitter. So you look at his batting average, career, 230, 235.
Yeah.
If that rule was in effect now, 280 hitter at that point?
I don't think Jay Bruce is going to be 280 hitter, man. I'm sorry.
I understand. Well, here's the thing. If you take away all the outs he got from them lining the players up three on one side of the field, and he would hit into it all the time, you put that person back in position, he gets them balls in between them players, right? That will increase his batting average. I don't know if it'd be by 50 points, but I'm telling you, I do believe the batting averages will start going up because of that. It's better for baseball that way. Because you watch baseball in the early 90s, they didn't really do the shift. That just started when analytics became so prevalent in baseball.
Wow, they're changing a bunch of things. So apparently,
yeah,
also,
there's a lot of rules.
Pickoffs, they're changing that to where after a third step off, the pitcher will be charged with a ball. Unless at least one offensive player advances the base or an out and made on the ensuing play after the step off. They're increasing the size of the bases from 15 inches to 18 inches, which is supposed to reduce.
That's interesting.
Which is supposed to reduce injuries and also increase stolen base attempts.
And that's one thing that baseball lacks anymore is the stolen base. Everybody's such a proponent of, I need to hit the ball at a launch angle. That's why I need to hit it. No, fuck the launch angle. You need to just fucking get the man on, get him over, and get him in. That's baseball. And that's
so here's what
using
I
the
thought
bunt.
About, Joe and Joe. The reason stolen bases have kind of gone by the wayside is because analytics. It's 100% analytics because – your stolen bases, you typically have about a 75% chance of getting a successful steal. So that gives you about a 25% chance of getting out. And if you lose that man on base per the analytics. But here's where I thought they can make things interesting to entice teams to steal. Is after the fifth inning, or you can say all game, whatever. But I thought after the fifth inning, you got a guy on first base. Let's say you got a guy on first base with one out, and you steal, and it's successful, that out comes off the board. Or let's say you have a guy on first, and it's two outs, and you steal second base or third base successfully, that out comes off the board. So let's say you're down 3-1.
You can't do that.
They're trying to decrease how long the game lasts, not increase it.
Yeah,
Jesus, can you
imagine?
You're
trying to increase it now.
Well, wait a second. First, before
wait a second.
I understand that they want to decrease games, but they also want to bring excitement into the game. They want more action and more – and nobody – and Josh just said it. Nobody's doing squeeze bunts anymore. Nobody is trying to advance runners. Everybody's trying to hit the home run or they're striking out. It would be strategy. Not everybody's going to be – that's why I said after the fifth inning, or maybe you do it after the sixth inning when there's only a few innings left in the game. You don't do it for the whole game. And if you're down 3-1 and you got a guy on first base, and let's say there's two outs and you steal second, that out comes off the board. Now you have one out and you got a guy on second. You have the tying run at the home plate. It makes for a lot of different exciting scenarios that could happen. And because we don't see people steal bases anymore. The league leader in steals is like 40 stolen bases now, if that.
Well, and I think a lot of that has to do with pitching too, right? We go back in the 80s. We go back in the 70s, 80s, 90s. What's the velocity of these pitchers? 85 to 92 to 93 miles an hour, correct? So it's a lot easier for them to steal because they have an extra second or two, right? These pitchers, they're coming out. They're throwing 95 to 100 miles an hour, starting pitchers. It's harder to steal when somebody can freaking chuck the ball 95 miles an hour, and then you got a catcher that can equally throw 80 miles an hour, you know? So
yeah.
I think
hurt
a lot of the stolen bases too, not just analytics. I think it was just – I mean, you just can't steal on freaking pitchers anymore because they're throwing the ball that damn hard.
But Nolan Ryan threw the ball very hard, and people
Yeah, I mean, Nolan Ryan did. He's one of the outliers, but I mean, depend on when you got him too. I mean, if he threw that off speed pitch, then yeah, you can run on him. If he's throwing that, it's hard to run on somebody.
But just like you said, these pitchers aren't throwing 104, 102 every single pitch, man.
No, they're throwing it. These starting pitchers are throwing 95 to 100. All 4 or 5 innings, right?
Well, to be honest,
You might be able to get them on a breaking pitch, but you got to guess on that pitch.
Well, if you think about it, though, also with them putting the pitch timer, I mean, there is no more giant like warm up breaks or anything like that. Like, I mean, you're going to see a lot of pitchers that are going to wear down quicker because they got to throw that ball, and so they're not going to, like you said, they're not going to consistently be throwing that ball 95, 98, 100 miles per hour.
They still will. They'll figure it out.
I think their speed will drop.
Yeah, it might. I got to tell you something crazy that I just read as I was reading about Nolan Ryan and trying to see how many times he was stolen against. Nolan Ryan, as we all know, he threw 7 no-hitters in his career. Do you know that he also threw 12 one-hitters?
Yep.
That's
he had a lot of one-hitters.
That's 12 one-hitters and 7 no-hitters. I don't think anybody's touching that record. I don't think 7 no-hitters is ever going to be – no one's coming close to that.
I don't think anybody's coming close to that. I mean,
I don't think anybody's getting close to his strikeout record either. He retired with 5,714 strikeouts. Randy Johnson, who's number 2 all time, do you know how many strikeouts he had?
Like 4,000.
4,875. He was almost 1,000 strikeouts shy, which is what, like another five or six seasons, right? That's like 5 or 6 seasons, 1,000 strikeouts. So,
well, you got to remember, Nolan Ryan pitched till he was like 45, though, too.
That's true, too.
So
that's
one thing to where, like, Randy Johnson, he retired at, 39? But Nolan Ryan pitched, he was like 45.
No, Randy Johnson was like 42 when he retired. If you don't believe me, he was 45 when in his final season in 2009 for San Francisco. He's 45 years
old. Did not know that.
So he only pitched 96 innings, but he's still 45 years old. So.
Yeah, I think Nolan Ryan had his last no-hitter when he was like 43?
Yeah, something like that. It was like 1990 or 91. He was 44.
Here's the thing. He also had a barely over a 500. I think he had just a little bit over a 500 record for his career. But what's crazy is you just said he had 7 no-hitters. He had 12 one-hitters. But he's never considered the best pitcher ever in baseball.
That's
crazy to think
about
that.
He played on a lot of bad teams. Nolan Ryan.
Oh, I know he did.
That, like, some of the Angels teams and then the Houston Astros teams he was on, then the Rangers, they just weren't that good. And as you know, a baseball pitcher
if I go out there and I throw seven innings and I strike out nine and I give up five hits but two runs and my team loses 2-1, I'm taking the loss, but I pitched a hell of a game.
Oh, exactly. I mean, anymore, if you fucking throw six innings with two runs, you're fucking great.
Yeah.
And you're not seeing these pitchers go. And I mean, that's the difference between, again, 70s, 80s, 90s, even before that. Pitchers were fucking throwing complete games. They were throwing until 10th, 11th inning, you know? Now these pitchers are five innings, four, five, six innings, and they're pulled.
Yeah.
That's how much analytics has changed baseball.
For the worst.
Like, normally you would have more bench players for hitters, and now you have to have it for your pitchers.
Yeah.
You got to have all these little specialists.
Let's, before we run out of time, because we only got about 7.5 minutes left to go, Josh, let's jump into AEW Revolution and talk about that. Obviously, the highlight of the night was the Iron Man match between Daniel Bryan and Bryan Danielson, and MJF. But there was some other quality matches that happened in the card. One of the shocking things that happened, and that I'm wondering if there's been a lot of smoke about Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks leaving. They dropped the trios title to the House of Black. So any more smoke on this guy leaving AEW?
The Young Bucks, no. Kenny Omega,
okay. Yeah,
there's a lot of smoke coming out from Kenny Omega. Coming to WWE with Cody. There's also a lot of smoke with Jay White, who just recently, his contract ended with New Japan. So they're thinking, well, if they can get Jay White, they might be able to go out and get Kenny Omega. Because Kenny Omega's contract is coming up in the next couple of months. The Young Bucks, I think they got another year or two before they're up.
Okay.
But Kenny Omega has already said he wants to go face Roman Reigns. I think he wants to come back to WWE to get a big payday before his career starts going downhill. I think he wants to go face off with AJ Styles. Some big names that he's never had a big chance to wrestle.
Somebody like Seth Rollins.
A lot of smoke there.
Good matchup for him.
Seth Rollins, that'd be fucking fantastic. So, usually where there's smoke, there's a little bit of fire. I think there's still talk of CM Punk still possibly coming back, and I think that's the driving force for Kenny Omega wanting to leave AEW. I think if CM Punk was released and let go and there's no rumors of him coming back, then I don't see that smoke coming from Kenny Omega.
Okay.
The one thing I'm kind of getting tired of watching is John Moxley. I really do like John Moxley, but goddamn, every fucking match you're bleeding, dude. You watered it down so much now. Now it's not even special anymore, you know? Like, you're supposed to bleed, like, maybe these big pay-per-views, but you're bleeding every fucking week, and it's just stupid. Like, I understand you're going after this hardcore audience, but goddamn, keep the blood in for once. And I think that's kind of where AEW, they're starting to get blood down. I'm going to not call it watered down, it's blood down. You're showing too much blood too many times anymore.
Yeah. Almost like
that Texas death match probably wasn't for everybody, because that match was fucking violent. And the Texas death match.
Yeah.
That
match
was pretty fucking violent. And it probably wasn't suitable for a lot of kids watching that. A lot of blood, hanging by a freaking a chain to tap out. It was a good match, but probably not the best for most audiences. You definitely can tell that they're not PG. I like the House of Black going over. They finally got a chance to shine. Hopefully they can continue, and we can see what they do. The four-way tag match, that's just stupid. I think with them, it was going to lead to FTR coming back anyway and FTR challenging to go get the titles. And I think FTR is going to get the belts. Their contract's also up. And there's a post from Dax Harwood that he took a picture, and on his desk there was a piece of paper, and then it looked like you could see the W and WWE, but most of it was put away to where the speculation, like, oh, shit, that's probably a contract offer from WWE. I think that was more of his tactics to try to get AEW to offer more money less dates for him. And they needed a break, so they finally came back, which I fucking love FTR. I think they are one of the best tag teams out there, and they remind me of 80s tag team wrestling. Dax Harwood, for some reason, reminds me so much of Arn Anderson. I don't know why, but he just does.
Real quick, I wanted
Ward
to ask Logue, you.
Whatever, Samoa Joe, that was, eh.
Yeah. Can we finally put the Jungle Boy, Jack Perry, and Christian Cage feud to bed? I feel like this has been going on for like 9 months. Like, they broke up.
Yes.
The Luchasaurus, and this has been happening for too long. And now it's just time to end it, please. Please end it. There's nothing else for them to do. I really didn't like when they broke up Jurassic Express. I thought that was a really good tag team, and they were fun to watch.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
You're right, and then Luchasaurus got injured too, so he's out for a while.
All right, UFC 285. Now, I watched this when I was in New York. The people who were staying at
you didn't download it yet, so I couldn't watch it.
It'll be up there. It'll be up. It actually might be up there now. No, it's not quite up there yet. It's downloaded. I haven't had a chance to upload it to the server, you son of a bitch. You know what? All you fuckers on Tux always bothering me. You know, on, like, Sunday night, people are like, hey, where's Mayor of Kingstown? Where's this? I'm like, I'm out of town. I'm not home to fucking do this shit for you people. So,
hey, there's only a couple things I've ever asked you for, so it's not me. And usually when I ask you for something, it's already been out for a while.
Yeah. Well, AEW
and
Revolution.
Plus, I got Paramount Plus. I use Joe's login.
AEW Revolution will be up there tomorrow, so don't fret. Not shocked that John Jones submitted Cyril Gane in the first round. He's one of the greatest of all time. Apparently, the next fight for John Jones is going to be against Stipe Miocic. That should be a hell of a one. But other than that, this card was very, very underwhelming. Sorry, very underwhelming. Didn't really care for the Rachmaninoff Jeff Neal fight. Almost near decision. It went to the third round because in a non-championship fight, they only fight three rounds, and he choked him out with like 30 seconds to go. So I don't know. To me, it's not a great card. Hopefully, I think the next one, guys, that we might have to get together for is UFC 286. This card is loaded, and the main event's going to be Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman. That's going to be fun.
Ooh, the rematch.
That's going to be happening in March 18th. So that one, is that already next weekend? I didn't know. I thought UFC only did, like, one major pay-per-view month. I didn't realize that they were.
Nine more. It's like every 2 weeks.
Jesus.
It's like every other weekend anymore. And that's also when NCAA tournament starts that weekend, too.
Oh, man. Okay. All right.
Very bad weekend for that. It can't be March 18th.
Maybe.
March 18th. Isn't that a Sunday?
Hold on. I'm pulling it up here.
Is it Saturday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, the 16th is Thursday.
Monday.
That's right. And then because St. Paddy's Day is on a Friday this year.
Okay, got it. All right, folks. Well, that is all the time we got here on Monday. We will be back at it strong on Friday. We did not get to unveil our bracket for the top divas. That's okay. We'll have it for. Sorry, Josh. Be ready for things that piss me off on Friday.
Okay.
Well,
things that piss me off. Louis not having the fucking bracket ready.
The bracket's ready. We just didn't get to it today, you son of a bitch. Maybe if you didn't have to fucking drop podcast to talk to your stupid boss, then we could have gotten to it, but, you know.
Well, I mean, one thing we didn't get to either is fucking Jake Paul and Tommy Fury. We could have got that one,
too.
Bastard, motherfucker.
Yeah. We didn't get to that either, but thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks for listening. We'll be back at it strong on Friday. Take care, everybody.
We cover all bases, face it, you can't erase us. Back and forth, watch where it take us. Cultural topics and sports, baby, you know we got it. Always our response is amazing. All bases covered, yeah. Yeah, you know you love it. Our thoughts, they be off of the dome. First to the second, the topics, they change like the weather. Then you know we bringing it home. We cover all bases, face